Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Wednesday, October 30th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we are going to gather around the virtual water cooler and talk about what we've been up to. My name is Ben Pearson, and I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor BJ Colangelo.
Hi, hi, hi,
All right, BJ, I'm not sure if it's immediately evident audio-wise, but I'm in a different part of my house because we're having a bathroom renovated. So I've been driven up to the far corners of my house. So my setup is completely different today. If it sounds terrible, I apologize to the listeners. But yeah, anyway, just wanted to mention that up top. If you hear any weird noises or like drilling or anything like that going on, I'm going to try to mute myself as much as possible. But wanted to set the table properly for that. But BJ, what have you been doing recently? I was following you on Instagram and just seeing, it seems like you've had like quite a whirlwind of activity recently.
Yeah, October is always my busy month because it's spooky season and horror is one of, you know, my areas of expertise. But I've been doing some very non-spooky season stuff, which the first thing is that I went to a wedding in Las Vegas. Two of my closest friends got married, and it was a very, very, very cool experience because they got married at the Sure Thing Chapel, which is like a little chapel in kind of like the old school part of Vegas, or what I like to call like the Honey, I Blew Up the Kid part of Vegas off of the strip. And it's, you know, this little chapel right next to a tattoo shop, like very, very cool. Loved it. It was also the same weekend as When We Were Young Fest. So I ran into a ton of people, a couple of whom are people that I've met online who are like Slash Film readers. So like shout out to those people as well who were there for the concert. And everyone's like, oh my God, are you here for this concert? I'm like, no, I'm actually here for a wedding, but I typically would be here for this concert. You are correct in predicting that. So that was a really fun experience. I also drove the entire way from Las Vegas to Vegas from Los Angeles to Vegas instead of flying. And I don't drive all that often because I have a terrible astigmatism, and everyone in Los Angeles has a new car with those horrific LED headlights and they just blind me at night. But I drove during the day, so I could do that. So it was nice to be able to drive again. But the other thing that I recently did was this past weekend, I also went to the premiere of Wallace and Gromit: Vengeance Most Foul. Thank you to Netflix for inviting me, as well as AFI Fest, who was hosting this world premiere. It was done at the historic Chinese Theater. And I hope that I never become one of those LA film people who loses the sense of magic going to one of these historic theaters. I know a lot of people go to them all the time, so it starts to feel old hat, but those theaters are so incredible and kind of life-affirming to experience because there's so much history within the walls. And listening to the filmmakers behind Wallace and Gromit, who had never had a premiere at that theater, also geek out about it, is one of those like really humbling moments of like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that is scary about the industry that we're in, of AI and, you know, job insecurity with like publications closing left and right. But there is still so much magic in going to the movies, and that is one of them. Also, Wallace and Gromit: Vengeance Most Foul is great. It's a great movie, and I'm excited for everyone to see it when it comes out in January. It'll hit Netflix.
Awesome. Man, that's so cool. Yeah, I was in LA for 11 years, I think, and I specifically remember an instance where in my 10th year there, I was just like running outside and looking up at the Hollywood sign and just had that sort of magic wave that you're talking about just completely overtake me. And like, I cannot believe that I'm here right now. And I'd been there for a decade at that point. So yeah, it's just, it's really a special place despite all the hellish aspects of it sometimes.
Right. Like, I mean, if I'm going to the Chinese Theater or the El Capitan or something, like 99.99% of the time, I have to deal with a ton of tourists and probably somebody like with a megaphone being like, you're going to burn in hell. Jesus is coming. And it's like, yeah, that sucks. And that's annoying. But the second I walk into that theater, it's like, oh, man, movies are the best.
Okay. So what have you been reading recently, BJ?
So I talked about this a little bit when it first came out, but for those who don't know, my wife and I wrote a book about the movie Sleepaway Camp. You can get it from diediebooks.com, but it is a book about the making of the movie Sleepaway Camp, as well as its history as an unintentional queer text. And more people have been reading it. And so I've been getting a lot more feedback, and it has been pretty much exclusively positive. And I know that it's probably because people are being nice to me on the internet, and no one's going to at the author to be like, hey, your book sucks. That's a lie. People will do that. They just haven't done it to me yet. And it's been giving me a little bit of imposter syndrome where I'm like, okay, what's the catch here? Like, no one has been mean about this yet. That seems suspicious. People are usually way meaner to me for way less. So I reread my own book to make sure that it doesn't suck. And I think it's still pretty good. Okay. I feel like it's good. I'm pretty pleased with it. I do also believe that the last two chapters of the book, which are the chapters that my wife wrote exclusively, are worth the price of the book alone, because it is her talking about trans horror and the way people tend to tokenize trans film critics to only talk about trans films, including Sleepaway Camp. I think that's the best part of the book, which is the part I had nothing to do with it, which I think also just speaks to my imposter syndrome.
Well, BJ, the idea of writing a book and getting it published somewhere is a massive feat. So speaking of not taking things for granted, I hope that you realize what an incredible accomplishment that is and that you take pride in that, because that's really an amazing thing. So I know it's easier said than done, but try not to feel too much of that imposter syndrome, because you're a killer. So,
thank you. I try. I've got to do something to quiet that like horrible voice in the back of my head.
Okay. Well, let's transition into what we've been watching. I rewatched a couple movies leading up to Halloween. I rewatched Bram Stoker's Dracula for the first time in, 20 years or something like that. It's been a long, long time. I know Chris Evangelista is a big fan of this movie, if I recall correctly. What are your feelings about what my wife and I drunkenly took to referring to this as Franny Foco's Brammy Stoko's D. I don't know why. It was just, we were in a state when we were watching this movie. But Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula. What are your thoughts about this movie?
I really dig Bram Stoker's Dracula, but I think that I am far more invested in the aesthetic of Bram Stoker's Dracula than I am anything else of that movie. And that's not to say that it's a bad movie, because it's not. I do think that it's a solid Dracula story. I think the performances are great, but that movie is so beautiful to look at, and the costume design is so gorgeous that, like, that is where my brain goes before anything else.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's the sort of defining aspect of the movie, I think, is the way it looks, because it's so unusual for 1992, I think, is when it came out.
Oh, God, yeah.
What a swing. And I've heard Francis Ford Coppola on the press circuit for Megalopolis this year talking a lot about the making of Bram Stoker's Dracula, and basically saying like that one of his goals with that movie was to try to make it using techniques that were popular or being utilized around the turn of the century, or like in the late 1800s, kind of like contemporaneous to when Bram Stoker actually published Dracula. And mm-hmm. So when you watch the movie with that in mind, some of the more extreme aesthetic choices make a little bit more sense. So I'm glad that I had that reminder going in, because I definitely didn't know that the first time that I watched the movie. And I remember being like, what the hell is going on in this movie visually? Like, this man is making some capital C choices here. So I enjoyed the experience overall. I thought Gary Oldman was very good, buried under a ton of makeup. Keanu Reeves, though, I mean, we got to talk about Keanu in this movie, because I think it's widely recognized that he just feels wildly miscast. And it's the accent more than anything else. I think he can pull off that character and that kind of like aw shucks quality that he has actually works pretty well for the Jonathan Harker role. But it's the accent that he's just, I feel like he wasn't developed enough as an actor to be able to pull that off at that point in his career. But what do you think? Are you like a Keanu apologist in Dracula or what?
Okay, so I wouldn't say that I'm a Keanu apologist, but I love the that both Bram Stoker's Dracula and then the Much Ado About Nothing film that comes the following year are both kind of legendary for Keanu not being able to handle kind of the accent or the language or this like very fancy manner of speaking, because there's just something still forever, like, whoa, dude, about him. And so is he a little out of place in Bram Stoker's Dracula? Yes. Have I become endeared to it after all these years? Also, yes.
Yeah, I think this was only my second viewing, so I haven't seen it enough for it to become endearing yet, but maybe I'll get there one day. I also love the supporting cast in this movie. Obviously, Winona Ryder is in there, but I forgot that, like, Billy Campbell, who played the Rocketeer, plays a supporting role, and, like, Cary Elwes shows up, and, like, every once in a while, a new character would be introduced, and I'd be like, oh, hey, that person, that's pretty cool. Like, Monica Bellucci is one of the, what are they called? Like, it's not Dracula's daughters, but what are they referred to as? The
The brides?
The brides, yes, thank you. I had no idea who Monica Bellucci was the first time that I saw that movie. So anyway, just some cool stuff there. And I would recommend, especially if people like are listening to this today or tomorrow and are still in the mood for watching something with an incredible visual style leading up to Halloween, check out Bram Stoker's Dracula. I also rewatched Scream, the first Scream, the first time in, again, a long, long time. And my wife had never seen this one all the way through. She'd seen a bunch of chunks of it. And so, yeah, like halfway through watching it, she was like, yeah, I've never seen this all the way through. I'm realizing now that I've never actually sat down and watched this start to finish. And I think that's one of your big passions in life, BJ, is watching people watch Scream at this point.
It is. It absolutely is. And so I'm fascinated to hear what her thoughts were, especially because Scream is one of those movies that I think a lot of people have absorbed through cultural osmosis. Like, my wife saw the Scary Movie films before she ever saw Scream. And so a lot of like the big moments of this are kind of ineffective to her because she's seen them parodied so much. And so I'm really fascinated to learn about people like watching Scream all the way through after existing in a world where it's been everywhere and parodied so much.
Yeah, I think Amy had that same experience. I don't want to fully speak for her, but I think she did see the Scary Movie films beforehand. And that was why she was like confused, because she was like, it's been so long since she saw those. And then since she had seen these chunks of Scream, that the parody and the real thing were getting mixed up in her mind. So that's a totally familiar feeling to me, having sat through a lot of those parody movies back in the day. But I think it really worked for her, and it worked for me too. I forgot just how gnarly the opening scene is with
the
Drew Barrymore thing.
It's so mean. It is one of the meanest openings, and everyone forgets that because it's been parodied so much. Everyone's like, what's your favorite scary movie? And it's like, did you forget about the part where Ghostface is dragging Drew Barrymore's dead body across the yard while she's crying for her mom on the phone, and her mom is on the other end hearing her die? That is fucked.
yeah, it's so much more intense than I remember it being, because like you said, it's kind of been basically like relegated to a joke at this point, and there's nothing funny really about the opening of this movie. It's a pretty funny movie throughout, but man, that opening, I was like, my jaw was on the floor. I just did not remember it going as hard as it does, because she also gets like hung, and like her insides are ripped open and like dripping out and everything. And I was like, wow, I totally forgot about this part of this. So
I mean, yeah, he guts her like a fish. He's a man of his word, or men of their word, I should say.
yeah, exactly. And then speaking of like familiar faces popping up, what's his name? The guy from, oh my God, why am I blanking on his name? The guy from Barry and from Happy Days played the Fonz.
Henry Winkler?
Henry Winkler, thank you. when he showed up playing the principal, I must have not even known who Henry Winkler was when I saw this movie for the first time, because I totally forgot he was in that. And he has a pretty small role, but it was just really enjoyable to see him there. And just these characters just really like going hard, and the garage door kill, which was something, one of the main images that I had remembered from my viewing so many years before, still like works pretty well and is kind of like a, I don't know, like I think as a society overuse the word iconic a lot, but there is something to the memorability of the kills in Scream that still stands the test of time. So
Just wanted to give that movie a shout. They're out. So good. Did you pop for Wes Craven's cameo?
Yes, where he plays Fred the janitor.
Fred the janitor in a Freddy Krueger sweater.
Yes, that was great. Okay, so yeah, Bram Stoker's Dracula and Scream are things that I revisited. And then I just wanted to blow through a couple TV shows real quick. I just wanted to give another shout out to English Teacher, which finished yes. its first season not too long ago. I think we talked about that show previously on the Water Cooler. And yeah, just great stuff. Like, it finished super strong. I think there were only 8 episodes in the first season, but mm-hmm. I didn't really think there was a weak episode. And the score, and or I should say the soundtrack specifically, for the music, the soundtrack for the show is so incredible that I want them to issue a vinyl for season 1 just so I can buy it, because I would absolutely own that, because, man, so many bangers.
All
on
bangers.
The soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. English Teacher. So you can watch that on FX on Hulu, or on Disney Plus if you have the Hulu combo or whatever. Only Murders in the Building season 4 just wrapped up, and I finished that. Are you caught up on that show?
I'm not caught up on that one. I've been too busy watching a million horror movies for Halloween.
Yes, totally reasonable. There's the drilling again. I'm sure people can hear that. Sorry about the noise there. So, yeah, I would say that season 4 of Only Murders in the Building was my least favorite season thus far, but it also has some pretty high highs in it. And so I think there's just one storyline or a group of new characters that I thought were like mostly extraneous to the plot. And it kind of felt like they were stretching things out just to get to that 10 episode mark that they had set out for themselves. So what I'm trying to say is, if the season was like 5 episodes instead of 10, I think it would have been A+. But because it was dragged out, I was kind of down on the season overall. Although I will say the actual finale episode was pretty good, so it got me back in a good mood, a good enough mood to finish out the show when it comes back for season 5. So that is also available on Hulu. And then I'm also loving What We Do in the Shadows season 6.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, I think is 4 episodes in right now. I think it premiered two weeks ago maybe, and they dropped like 3 episodes in a row, and then one episode after that. And man, just so funny for a show like this to be in its 6th season and to be as funny as it is just really, really impressive. So I think if all goes according to plan, my wife and I are going to dress up as Laszlo and Nadja for Halloween tomorrow night. So
oh, good.
I'm excited about that. But yeah, anyway, shout out to What We Do in the Shadows. This is its final season, and if it keeps up this quality level, it's going to be like an all-timer show. So, yeah.
But the important question is, are you going to be like formal attire Laszlo, or are you going to be bat Laszlo?
No, formal attire. I've got like the Seinfeld pirate shirt and everything. So
I'll try
to post a photo to Instagram or something, so you can follow me on there at Ben Pears if you want to see what that looks like. Okay, BJ, I'm going to put myself on mute so people are blissfully removed from this drilling noise. And you tell me what you've been watching recently.
Sure. And also, before I say what I've been watching, I would like all of the Slashfilm Daily listeners to perpetuate the rumor that I'm starting that you just live in one of those buildings that Jigsaw owns for saw traps. And that's what's going on in the other room. It's like there's just casual saw traps happening while we're trying to record this podcast. All right. So as far as stuff I've been watching, the first thing is I watched The Faculty in the theater with a group of people, many of whom have never seen The Faculty. So I guess you and I had a nice like Kevin Williamson double feature going on here. The Faculty is my favorite of all of the Kevin Williamson scripts, even though I think Scream is like overall my favorite movie of his horror run. But The Faculty is my favorite script. I love that movie so much, and it plays so well in a theater, and especially being around people who've never seen it, they were losing their minds because there are so many lines in that movie that I think people forget exist. Like, everyone likes to remember Josh Hartnett's ridiculous haircut, or they like to remember that at the end Clea DuVall wears a violet cardigan and it is very strange because her character is so clearly a goth lesbian. What are they doing? But they forget that you have like Famke Janssen at one point threatening Josh Hartnett and saying, I'm going to shove my foot so far up your ass, you'll be sucking my toes till graduation. And it's like, Ah, God bless America. What a great line that is. Wow. So it was very, very fun. I also forgot, because I've seen this movie so many times, how many jump scares are in this movie from people just kind of like popping out of nowhere, because the person next to me lost it every single time, which was great. Other fun things I think people should look out for, if even if they've seen it a million times. I love that when Elijah Wood's character Casey is getting his room turned over because he's in trouble with his parents, and his dad, of course, is, you know, Shooter McGavin, which is great. The porno magazine under his mattress is Boob Magazine, clearly a fake magazine, but it is so funny to me. It's like beer brand beer, Boob Magazine branded porn. So yeah, The Faculty was great. Great watch. Great movie. Super, super fun. And then I continued my Josh Hartnett trip and I rewatched Trap, watched it with my wife. And she pointed something out that I can't unhear now. And Trap is currently available to stream on Max. So if you missed it in theater, you can watch it now. But when Josh Hartnett is doing his like kind of cornball dad shtick before it's, you know, the big reveal that he's the butcher, which is not a reveal that's in the trailer, so I didn't spoil anything for you. But when he's being his cornball dad, his performance is John Cena coded. Like, I can't, like, she said it and then I kept watching this movie and like I would close my eyes and listen to him talk and I'm like, oh my God, you're right. This is John Cena in Vacation Friends or in Blockers or any of like these comedy movies he does. That is Josh Hartnett's like normal dad character in Trap. It's just John Cena.
Well, you know what that means. We need Josh Hartnett in a big studio comedy now.
Yes. Like, and it's weird that he's never like really done that. Because I think he could do it. Like, in this movie proved to me, I was like, he's funny. Josh Hartnett is a funny guy. So, yeah, I'm very interested in seeing him in a comedic role. Also, I love Trap. I know a lot of people are, like, mixed on it. I'm also a M. Night Shyamalan defender, so, like, I guess take that with a grain of salt. But everyone in that movie knows exactly what movie they're making and is having a very fun time doing it. And I know a lot of people are like, I like the first half and I don't like the second half. I like both halves. I think it's fun. I think people need to chill out. Like, Shyamalan makes fun popcorn movies.
Yeah, I'm one of those mixed people that you're talking about regarding Trap. But I don't know. If people were looking for a funny, recent Josh Hartnett performance, I would recommend watching Guy Ritchie's Operation Fortune Ruse de Guerre, this movie that came out, I think, last year that stars Aubrey Plaza and Jason Statham. And Josh Hartnett plays a movie star that they, like, kidnap and force to help them with some sort of spy mission that they're working on. But the movie's not actually very good. I mean, Hartnett is great in it, so it's like a really good thing for Hartnett completists, but I don't know if I can go as far as to give it like a full-throated recommendation to people. So anyway, that exists if people want to take that information and do what you will with it, but I just wanted to throw that out there. So
amazing.
Okay, so I got what one else more. Are you watching, BJ?
Yeah, so the last one that I wanted to shout out, because again, I've just been watching like a ton of stuff. If you follow me on social media, you'll know what I'm watching. But I am very much preaching the gospel of Dropout, the streaming service that is formerly College Humor. Now it's just Dropout. They have all of their own original programming, and they have a section called Dropout Presents, which is when they put on a lot of like stand-up specials, like Hank Green's stand-up special is on there. But they also do more like individual performance pieces. And one of them is Courtney Peruso's Vanessa 5000, which is one of the most mesmerizing performances I have watched this year. It is a comedy special, but instead of it being her like just doing stand-up or something, she is playing Vanessa 5000, a realistic humanoid AI sex bot. And so she's talking to the audience. She can do this thing with her voice where she sounds like an AI voice coming out of a human mouth. And she moves around very robotic-like. And it's super, super funny, but it is this really brilliant sort of look at kind of where society is heading, to where the way that women are objectified, eventually we're not going to be able to tell the difference between like AI girlfriends that people are trying to develop and actual human women. And it's not like preachy or heavy-handed or anything like that. It's so entertaining. And yet it is so horrifying in a way that I like cannot stop thinking about. And I highly encourage people check it out. They Dropout post so many social media clips on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, whatever, if you want to like get a little preview, if I'm not selling you on this. Like, I've watched it like 3 times because I can't stop thinking about it. It's so incredible.
Okay, so how would people find that specific thing? Does it have like a Vanessa 5000 video title that people can track down, or how does that work?
Yeah, so you can check out like Vanessa 5000 on social media. That's where you'll get your previews. But to watch the actual performance, you do need to be a subscriber to Dropout. But Dropout as a streaming service, it's like $6. It's super affordable, and you get a ridiculous amount of their shows. They have a cooking show called Gastronauts where they have actual chefs competing, but their challenges are ridiculous. It'll be like, I want a meal that is very heavy, like literally heavy, or I want the horniest meal, whatever that means to you. And so it's very fun. It's a lot of like comedians that are working on stuff. Like they have a show called Make Some Noise, which is as far as I'm concerned, it is the like new generation's answer to Whose Line Is It Anyway. It is so funny. There's Game Changer, which is a game show, but the game changes every episode and the contestants don't know what game they're actually playing until they start playing it. There's so much good stuff on Dropout, and it makes me feel kind of insane that like not a lot of people have it, at least in like film circles, because they should, because it's so good and smart, and very fun and very entertaining. And a lot of the comedians and actors they have on here are people that eventually, like, you start seeing them pop up in other movies and you're like, oh my God, like, I know that person. They're on Dropout. That's really cool. And they also have an entire section dedicated to like actual plays with like D&D, like Dimension 20, if that's a thing you're into as well. But yeah, the Dropout Presents series has been one of my favorite things they've had this year. I also wrote about one of the previous ones, which was Chris Grace as Scarlett Johansson, which was comedian and actor Chris Grace sort of talking about the representation of Asian Americans in Hollywood through the lens of like Scarlett Johansson's casting decisions. Also an amazing performance and an amazing thing to watch. So if you have $6, I highly recommend getting a subscription to Dropout and just like test it out for a month and see how you feel about it. Because I'm addicted to it. Like I've pretty much watched their entire library at this point.
Awesome. Well, yeah, that's a great pitch. Okay, so we have a couple more sections that we want to talk about. But before we do that, let's take a quick break.
Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's badlandsranch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
All right. So last couple sections here, BJ, what have you been eating recently?
Okay. So while I was in Vegas, I had some good food that I wanted to shout out. The first one is we were staying at the MGM Grand because that was the only place on the strip that I could afford to stay at for this trip. And I overpaid. I'm just going to leave it at that. But in the MGM Grand, they do have a restaurant called Kraft Steak. And Kraft Steak had the best steak I've ever had in my life. It was very expensive, but I did not pay for it. My wife paid for it because she is a godsend and makes more money than I do. And it was so good. Unbelievable good. And I had short ribs that were also really, really good. And there was like potato puree that was really, really good. And these like incredible like honey glazed carrots that were super good. But like, this was like a life changing steak. Like one of those steaks that you have that you're like, this is how all food should be. And anyone who doesn't get to experience this food is missing out. And I'm so sad about it. So yeah, Kraft steak, very good. Highly recommend it. But the one I really wanted to talk about is a pizza shop in Las Vegas called Evil Pie. And it's evil like Evel Knievel. This pizza was so flipping good. And it's like the like big slice pizza, which is really cool. But the back patio of this place is covered in murals of like Vegas icons as Garbage Pail Kids. And like little Cabbage Patch Doll sort of faces. The food was so good. The vibes were immaculate. Highly recommend it. If you were ever in Las Vegas, track both of them down. But like Evil Pie, that is like, that's the jam. Like I'm going to go visit there anytime I'm in Vegas for the rest of my life because it's so cool. It was playing punk music. They had it all decorated for Halloween in the back. So they had like a whole like Beetlejuice thing going on. Yeah. Highly, highly recommend. If you're like a film person, especially if you're a horror person, Evil Pie is the jam. And they do have vegan pizza as well. And I tried it and it's pretty dang good. So yeah, Kraft Steak and Evil Pie, 10 out of 10.
Man, I mean, everything about Evil Pie sounds pretty good, except for the Garbage Pail Kid thing, which is like such a disgusting aesthetic to me that I have just no interest in that whatsoever. So maybe I'll go in there and just sort of avert my eyes from that mural wall the whole time.
But, well, if you stay on the inside, you won't have it because it's just the back patio is where all of that is.
Okay. I wasn't going to say anything in this section, but because you said they had vegan pizza, it reminded me that last time I went to Vegas, and I may have mentioned this on the previous episode of the podcast, but I'll just throw them another shout out here. I went to, I was covering cinema con for Slash Film, and I went to this place called The Modern Vegan that I have only eaten at in Vegas. I'm not sure if they are franchised in different cities or whatever, but it was incredible food. And I'm trying to eat, you know, a handful of vegan meals a week or whatever, and this place was just like lights out. So The Modern Vegan, again, if you're looking for another recommendation to go along with Kraft Steak and Evil Pie. Okay, last section, what have you been playing recently, BJ?
Okay, so myself and Slash Film writer Bill Bria are in a Discord group. It's like a secret Discord group, but our secret Discord group had a Halloween party meetup out here in Las Vegas, and it was at the Roguelike Tavern, which is like a cool kind of geeky spot. A lot of people play board games there, and one of the members of the Discord brought his vintage game, which is a board game of Alfred Hitchcock's Why. Have you seen this game, play this game? Do you know what this game is?
Never heard of this. And you're saying Y as in the word W-H-Y, not just the letter Y, right?
Correct. Like why, question mark. Like that is what it is. It is an Alfred Hitchcock board game. Let me say right off the top, this is an old game. The illustrations in some of these game pieces and game cards are horrifically culturally insensitive. The two worst ones, one, there is a drawing of Pocahontas that is awful. It is some like early animation of indigenous Americans, like, oh, what makes the red men red kind of illustration, like bad. And then one of the game pieces is an Asian character, and I don't think I need to describe what that would look like if this is a vintage board game. But basically, you are playing some sort of like investigator, and the names are all like very close to famous investigators. Like one that's supposed to be like Sherlock Holmes is like Shylock something or other. The character that I played is clearly a Dick Tracy knockoff, but instead of being named Dick Tracy, his name was Dick Crazy, which we all had the most fun with. But this game is essentially Clue, but more complicated. So what you're trying to do is you use the pieces to go around the board and collect cards, and you eventually want to collect 4 cards that give like a murder weapon, 4 cards that come up with like who did it, and 1 card that gives you a motive. So it's very similar to Clue and card collecting. You also, it's partially a memory game because if you discard something, you leave the card on the yard and then you have to remember what cards are there so that you can pick them up. So it's like Clue plus memory. Plus, you can also like battle other detectives if you end up in the same room as them, and you can be like,
I bet you have this Daniel Boone card and I want it. And if they have it, they have to give it to you. And it's very complicated, unnecessarily so. But once you get into the swing of it, it becomes very fun and people get really aggressive. I did win, for the record. But playing an Alfred Hitchcock board game was just like too silly to not do. And it was surprisingly fun. But also, like, it's kind of like Monopoly in that this game could last forever if you don't really strategize. And that could make it not fun very, very quickly. But you can also, like, immediately win the game if you collect all of the cards that give you the silhouette of Alfred Hitchcock. Yeah, I guess it's supposed
to play shortcut.
Yeah, it's supposed to play out like, oh, this is like a you're in your own Hitchcock movie. But like, it's not. It's not at all. The gimmick is just that it has his name on it.
Okay, so that's Alfred Hitchcock Y. I just looked this up, and there's a used copy on eBay for $24.95. So once again, do with that what you will. But yeah, I think that's going to bring us to the end of today's episode. You can find more about a lot of the stuff that we talked about at slashfilm.com. I will try to link to a couple things in the show notes. Also, Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
The future of cool, comfortable sleep is here. Introducing the new Sleep Number Climate Cool Smart Bed. The only smart bed in the world that actively cools and effortlessly adjusts to both of you. Sleep up to 15 degrees cooler on each side. It actively cools to keep you cool and comfortable throughout the night. Save on smart beds now during our fall sale, exclusively at a Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.